This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Meet the residents of Element City. Air usually has their head in the clouds.
Oh, my new jacket!
Earth can be a little seedy.
Nothing weird going on here.
Just a little pruning.
Water is always getting into something.
Help!
And fire? As ordered, we run a little hot.
This shop is dream of our family.
Someday it'll all be yours.
But we all live by one simple rule.
Elements cannot mix.
What the?
The pipe squished me all out of shape.
Dang.
That's better.
Oh.
So you've never left Firetown?
Sorry, buddy. Elements don't mix. Plus, my dad would boil you alive.
Why doesn't anyone get to tell you what you can do in your life?
Whoa.
Ember, I see a change in you.
What, hair guy? You live here?
It's my mom's place.
We got two kids that are swimming around here somewhere.
Orca! Follow!
I've been trying to fill my father's shoes. I never once asked what I wanted to do.
Try this!
Dad, those are too hot.
I love hot food.
You see? He likes it.
Pixar's 27th feature, Elemental, opens in theaters on June 16th, and today we're joined by director Peter Sohn to talk about the project, which is set in Element City, where water, fire, earth, and air residents live together. The story follows Ember, who's readying to take on her retiring father's shop when she meets a water resident named Wade. Elemental is produced by Denise Rehm and executive produced by Pete Docter. Peter Sohn is a member of Pixar's creative leadership team and previously directed 2015's The Good Dinosaur. Earlier at Pixar, he was a story artist on titles including Ratatouille, for which he voiced Emil, and Up, and his appearance was actually the basis of Russell. I'm Carolyn Giardina. Welcome to the Hollywood Reporter's Behind the Screen. Pete, welcome. It is great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Carolyn. Yeah, I'm honored to be here.
So to start, you have a story by credit in this movie. Tell us about the genesis of the idea and what you wanted to convey.
I did this radio program with Terry Gross on Fresh Air about the Good Dino. And I told her that I grew up in the Bronx and I was born there. And then after that program aired, someone in the Bronx, the city of the Bronx, called me and, you know, since that you're from the Bronx, we'd love to celebrate you and the arts and several other artists here. And I was surprised by it. And I said, like, look, I was only in the Bronx since I was like 9 or 10. I can't even call myself the Bronx. And she was like, you are a son of the Bronx. You will do this thing. It's a great honor. And I was very Bronxian in how she sort of set that up. But I asked to invite my parents there. And so I went to this ceremony and I had a little speech I was going to give about on Pixar. But when I got up on stage and turned around to see the audience, I saw my family, my mother and father, and my brother and his wife, amongst all these other, you know, immigrants and this diverse, you know, group of people there, this audience. And for some reason, seeing them there hit me very emotionally, and I broke down to tears. And I just thanked them. I just said, my brother and I would not be here if it wasn't for the sacrifices that my mom and dad made. And someone in the background yelled, like, you better thank your parents, and sort of brought me back to the reality of it all. But that gesture of you know, appreciating their plight and what they had given up and risked for us really affected me. And when I got back to Pixar, you know, some friends and my bosses at the time asked about how that experience was. And I told them this story that I'm telling you. And they said, that's your next movie, Pete. That's the movie you got to do. And so that idea became the heart of this thing. And so that's how it started.
Well, let's start with the environment. You set it in Element City, where you see the different elements living together. Tell us about just that idea and creating that world.
Yeah. So much of it also began from, you know, an early age when I was in school, looking at the periodic table of elements. They just reminded me of apartment complexes like the ones that I grew up around, where each little box with each little element was a different family or a different, you know, community in there. And I used to make, you know, these funny drawings of, you know, copper living next to helium, but don't trust helium because they're gassy, you know, and I'd have all these little fun drawings of that. And then in, you know, the table is very complicated. So in trying to translate that idea of diversity, I boiled it down to the classical elements of earth, fire, water, and air. And from there, started to feel this world out of different communities coming together. And in the middle of that, this fire family, you know, and with our main character, a young firewoman, dealing with first generation, second generation issues, and her identity in a city like this. And so starting with her, I was like, okay, she's fire. What would be really a big challenge for her and her family to sort of live around? And so I was like, oh, if a city was built around water, or the infrastructure was water, started to form. And then from there, you know, there was a hierarchy start to form. It's like, okay, water came first. When you think of land, okay, maybe it's like a delta, like where a river outputs into a larger body of water. And then earth would come the second, and then air, and then fire. And so with that hierarchy, we started to design the city, and trying to use pieces of cities that we've researched. The artists took a lot of fun liberties with the places that they were from, but then also having fun elementizing all of it, you know, like, oh, what would a fire town look like? Oh, maybe it's a bunch of chimneys and fireplaces. And with a water town, what if it's just a bunch of champagne glasses with waterfalls going over it? So it was just a mix of all that.
What were some of the real life cities that you took some inspiration from?
I started off with New York and those pieces that I knew, but then Amsterdam was a big one with the canals and how they sort of, you know, webbed all those canals through a city, Venice, Tokyo. There were several port cities in the United States, or gateways that I call them, before the advent of air travel, that were really interesting, that started to form different pieces of the city. But then, you know, some of my favorite moments in movies and how they shot locations also became a factor. Famous cinematography of like, you know, Manhattan and Amelie, things like that.
Well, Ember lives in the fire district and is working towards taking over her father's shop as he's planning to retire. I would imagine that her story was very personal for you. Would you talk about creating her character and her story?
Yeah, thank you, Carolyn. I mean, my father had a grocery store in the Bronx, and the idea of owning a grocery store with the amount of money they had, it wasn't just a store; it was a home. We lived there, you know, and when you're growing up in it, you literally are playing in the aisles. You are literally, eating and having all your meals inside the shop. And so when we were building this fire town, I mean, this fire shop that Ember's family had, it was really taking a lot of those memories and trying to make it of a fire culture. You know, my parents sold a lot of different conveniences for different cultures, but what would a fire culture need? You know, and so the charcoal briquette foods and some of these items that we've really had a lot of fun with started to appear. But, you know, it wasn't just the idea of this shop. It was the idea that my parents were working very hard in there. And, you know, in our film, we tried to showcase not only the richness of the culture and the items in the shop, but just how hard this family was working there. There's a shot of Ember's father falling asleep at the counter after working all night. And that was something I remember a great deal of, like, holy cow, the hours are so long for this kind of work, and to find your dad just, you know, asleep on the counter at 11 o'clock was something that we were trying to capture, you know. But then he was a gregarious person. And so there were so many pieces of how he dealt with customers that we were trying to keep alive in Bernie and the community that would shop there. But for Ember, yeah, it was a lot of pride that I had of what my father had accomplished that we were trying to invoke, not only in the shop, but also the culture. You know, she's very proud of being Irish. This is her world. It's a hearth. The whole place has been built like a fireplace where a fire can be comfortable burning. And that was, you know, a big piece of all this.
And tell us about Wade, our water resident.
The idea of fire and water started very early on for me in the development of this thing. I had married someone that wasn't Korean. And, you know, this caused a lot of conflict because my grandmother's literal dying words were like, marry Korean. And then she passed away. And it was a pressure that really created a lot of culture clash for me growing up with that. And so I found someone that culturally was very different from my culture. And that was one of the main ingredients to this relationship of these opposites trying to come together. So because they were opposites, when I first started drawing what a fire character was and a water character was, I was just labeling very elementarily, starting with, you know, what do I know of fire? They're passionate. Fire can be deemed like a temper. It could be connected to a creative spark. You know, it's translucent. It glows. It brings light to people. And I was doing the same thing with water, but like, oh, it's, you know, it's go with the flow. It's, you know, it's, transparent. It reflects. It refracts. All of those things. And then I started evolving personalities out of that. And with Wade, something that I'm a very emotional person, and but like a sap. I'm just the sap. When, you know, watching like Olympic commercials where parents have struggled to put their, I will just cry rivers. And there was some early drawings where I'd done of Wade being a water person would, you know, show all his emotions like that. And it made sense because he's transparent. He can't hide his emotions. They're on his sleeve. And that was the next brick to his personality as we continued to evolve him. And so that Ember would be more strong-willed. She had a little bit more of a wall. She doesn't like to show emotion. Then obviously someone like Wade that I connected to would be the opposite of all that. And then trying to find a Venn diagram where these two opposites could possibly connect became the game.
And you want to talk about what they learned from each other?
Yeah. Wade has always been a mirror character, meaning he's just reflecting what Ember sees in herself. This idea of how Wade, you know, leads his life through empathy and compassion sort of cracks into Ember's, you know, visage of herself, that she begins to see that she also has this, you know, wonderful connection that she can have with the world, but she's been sort of pushing it away. And, you know, in this world of differences, you know, I saw it with my family. I saw it with the xenophobia that we had in our lives. just that little bit of putting yourself in someone's shoes, that little bit of empathy really changed the world around us when we were growing up, and trying to invoke that in this relationship of fire and water as well.
Now, you always hear about the brain trust whenever a Pixar movie is made. Who was on your brain trust?
I had several directors, including Pete Docter, Domi Shi from Turning Red, some new directors that are coming up. You know, Andrew Stanton was part of it. Dan Scanlon was a major part of it. And a couple heads of stories that that I had trusted over the years. And Brian Larson, we had our writers, of course, Julia Cho, a writer as well. They were all fabulous.
And do you want to talk a little bit about the brain trust and, you know, how did that steer the story, or could you give an example?
Oh, yeah. The process of it, I feel like, can be very aggressive in its sort of, it's meant to be aggressive in terms of it. Everyone's there is to try to help the film be its best. And so a lot of the advice comes from trying to diagnose what the patient or the film is having. I'm painting that picture only because I've been in other sort of circles where it's just about people telling you how they would make the movie, where what I really appreciate about the groups at Pixar in terms of the Brain Trust is that they are always there to try to help you help, you know, the film. And so an example of that, you know, the film went through many different versions throughout the years. And some of it took some personal turns, just to be frank. My parents both passed away during the making of this thing. In the early development stages, when we were up and going, my father had passed away, and the film took a dark turn that I didn't realize that it had had. And I was pitching this version that where the world was really angry, really hateful. And I think these were just feelings that I had after I had lost my father, the things that he experienced sort of somehow echoed or magnified what I was feeling about the world and how the world was also changing. And as I pitched all of this, there was a lot of tough feedback. And some of the feedback was like, Peter, the world is unlikable. I don't enjoy being in this world of this film. And so there was just really honest opinion. I mean, comments that were being made. But then Pete Docter, my executive producer, you know, after the meeting was over, said, hey, Pete, I know that you're going through the loss of your father. And I have to tell you that, you know, this version seemed to take a dark turn. Was this the version that you always wanted to, you know, make? And I was very honest then. I said, no, I just want to make a really hopeful story about connection. And he said, like, yeah, let's pause on this version and, you know, reevaluate what that, you know, original intent was. And I did. And then, you know, for the following years, it was just going back to that original North Star of this connection and appreciating those that had sacrificed for us. And I'm forever grateful, just because not only was it about helping a film get up, it was also sensitive to what I was going through. You know, there was a war that was going on between a father and daughter in a version of the film. It was almost like a Godfather type story where they were really spiteful toward each other because each of them couldn't get what they wanted. And they were like literally, because they were fire, the business was more of a sanitation business where they would just burn garbage of the city. And they started sort of, you know, blowing each other's businesses up. And it was really dark. And it all led into this big sort of city on fire sort of ending.
And as it evolved and what you actually made, What do you hope children and adults take away from the film?
I mean, look, it was all built to have a really good time in the theater. I mean, you know, this idea of this fantastical world you know, we just wanted to have a lot of fun in it. Underneath all of that, it is a movie about connecting through, you know, understanding our differences and bridging those sort of cultures. Look, if families or children or adults come out of this being appreciative of someone who risks something for them or sacrificed something in their life, that would mean the world to me, Carolyn. You know, the whole film has been trying to find this beautiful way of connecting with each other. And I hope people can feel that.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Pixar also often talks about research that was done. Would you talk a bit about that?
Well, there was a little bit of research that I was able to do early on before COVID hit. And then sort of COVID, once we hit the pandemic, all the research was obviously, brought to a very, world with parameters. But my first sort of trip was to New York to really understand migration and how a city sort of evolved with that. And, it was beautiful. It was one of the last things I got to do with my mom before she passed, was walk around Chinatown, Lower Manhattan, Orchard Avenue, where the Lower East Side, where there was a lot of that famous sort of history of these sort of like, you know, brownstone type buildings where, you know, you had the laundry strung across the windows and everything. But understanding the layers of history through the buildings, you know, like, oh, when we were in Chinatown, we saw this wonderful, beautiful, ornate building, but it was a funeral parlor for the Chinese community there. But I had researched that, like, oh, this used to be an Italian bank, and that's why it was so ornate. And some of those layers really were inspiring to see, like, yes, communities come through trying to make an imprint and trying to make a wonderful life for themselves. And so in the movie, you'll see that type of history that we were trying to capture as well, that when this fire, a couple comes to the city for the first time, they arrive in what was, you know, originally an earth neighborhood, but then it slowly evolves into a fire neighborhood, trying to bring some of that sort of inspiration in there. And then from there, it was a lot of science research. We had talked to, you know, firefighters, we talked to engineers and scientists about the different powers of the elements, of what fire could do, how it could burn, and what the fuel sources might be, how it could change color with different fuel sources, with water, the power of, like, how it could move through cracks, but really have the power to, you know, push, you know, heavy materials, its refraction, you know, like when it freezes, all of this stuff. We started doing that kind of research as well, which was really fun. I was doing this homework stuff with my kids too, in trying to find, like, how much soap would it take to create a bubble in water? You know, could we use a lens to of water to burn something? You know, like a magnifying lens. And
water and fire are also two things that are notoriously very difficult to do in computer graphics. So, is this also something that I would imagine that you're working with your technology team on?
Yeah, so exactly. As though that research was being done in terms of the visual side of this, or the character side, yeah, the building them was also being was started. And so I wouldn't call that research. I would just call all of that experiments, Carol. And there were so many experiments being started at that time of what could we do with our current technology with fire and water. And we found very quickly that we were very limited to it, meaning, you know, there was the last sort of firework that we had seen was these effects that was done on the film Onward, which was a very realistic fire. And when we turned that fire on for our main character, Ember was terrifying. She looked like a monster from, Lord of the Rings movie. And so that first test immediately forced us to go, like, okay, how do we find a caricature to this fire? How do we control this so that we can allow features on this thing? And so more experiments started that way until we found this balance between realism and very 2D look to Ember. But then on top of that, there was no pipeline for creating a simulation or this effect of fire for every shot of the film. She would be in every a moment of this film, and we just didn't have the computing power or the pipeline to do it. Most of the pipeline at Pixar was made for plastic toys or, you know, very opaque metal cars and skin for our human characters. But we didn't have anything that was as busy and as translucent as these fluid effects needed to be. And so that became another set of a work that needed to be done that ultimately Paul Kaniuk, one of our TDs, reached out to Disney's Zurich. And there was some technology that they discovered that helped us control the fire. It was called NST. It was neural style transfer, where it was able to take realistic fire and transfer a graphic quality in three dimensions to it. And that really helped find our look to the film. And then once we found fire, the look of Ember, water, and all the other subsequent elements, we would base off of that design aesthetic. And so for water, you know, we had done the same thing where we tried realistic water, and he was so transparent. You would just see these pool balls of eyes and this like sort of dentured mouth that you would just be sitting in there because he was so transparent. And then so that same caricature level that we were doing with Ember, we would do with Wade. Wade ultimately became the monster. He was so difficult of a character. You know, there's no way audiences would ever see this or notice it. But in every shot of the film, his lighting would change because he's refracting and reflecting it. And so his look in the basement would be very different than the look when he's out in the sunlight. And trying to control that and trying to control the ingredients of him that would make him water would be the biggest challenge, really, of the technical side of this film.
You recently introduced the film at Cannes. What was that experience like?
It was an out-of-body experience for sure. I had never done anything like that before. The history of that festival and of the cinema in France I deeply respect, you know, from the Lumiere brothers and the first audience watching film in the history of the world started there. And then the fantastic worlds of Georges Méliès and what they had done at that time had always been an inspiration growing up, you know, and going there and the amazing set of films that have gone through that place, it's quite an honor. And then getting to, you know, it's terrifying too, Carolyn. Like, I can't tell you how nervous I was, you know, walking down some of these red carpets where they just, you know, are flashing cameras in you. And I'm not used to any of it. And it was very intimidating. And so by the time you sit in your seat, you know, your heart is about to, you know, jump out of your body. And waiting for the audience, you know, you could feel that they were engaged. And by the end of it, they were all standing up in the darkness. I didn't even see them when the credits were rolling. And then once they stopped the credits midway and turned on the house lights on, and I was shocked to see all these people that were standing in the dark, just applauding the film. And I'll never forget it, you know.
What a great experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you actually started working on this before the pandemic. With that in mind, how do you feel about bringing the movie to theaters, you know, after everything that's happened? I mean, do you feel pressure? Do you feel just joy seeing it back?
All of it. I mean, Carolyn, like the pressure is real, you know, trying to have the film, an original film, pop out of a world of, you know, a lot of franchise and sequels, a lot of movies that I want to see, honestly, you know, and, but that, it's and so the pressure of trying to capture an audience that in a field that's so competitive is really daunting. But at the same time, I'm very excited for audiences to see this. You know, we've had a couple screenings outside of Cannes as well with audiences that really have an amazing time with it, and it's one of the biggest joys of, you know, this whole art form. all you ever want to do is reach out and try to connect, like any favorite piece of music, that's you just want it to create, a moment in time that you can share with an audience. I really believe in that the human, when there's a lot of people in gathered together and they're sharing in an emotion, there's a chemistry that's happening that it can't be replicated in any other form. And I'm hoping for that, and that's where my joy really lies, is trying to get that wonderful audience connection. I feel like the season of our films coming out in the theaters have been, it's been tougher. And will audiences come back to original movies like this? I'm hoping so. But yeah, it feels slightly different for me because of that. But yeah, it's there.
What is your favorite scene in the movie and why?
Can I give you two, if that's okay?
Of course.
So there's a really funny one that I love that really plays to the culture clash and to the elementizing of the world. And it's our main, Wade, our main water guy, gets caught in the basement of the fire shop by Ember's father. And he's an inspector for the city. So he's got this little tag that says inspector on it. And he is forced to lie about his job, where the father's like, you're an inspector? And he's like, no, I'm not an inspector. And he tries to cover it up with his hand, but his hand is see-through and water. So it magnifies the sign, making it worse for him. And then he sees that, and then he uses his forearm to cover it, and then it magnifies it even more. I've always loved that as a metaphor of this film, of that, it's reflecting, everything that's inside him and the joke of it.
I remember that shot. Yeah.
Yeah, I really, and it's just the technical achievement of it. It's a very simple gag, but it was very difficult to execute. And so I'm very proud of that. And then there is a moment that's very sensitive of when Ember, our main character, has done a set of deliveries at the fire shop. She's finished it. She's been challenged by her father to do this. And, she comes back in the evening all, full of hubris of having, broken his record. And, she comes through the door blasting all this energy of like, and then she stops, mid-track because she sees her father. The camera pans over to see her dad asleep on the counter. And, when the camera pans over to reveal him, he looks like this small little campfire sitting on a table. And, then Ember, loves her dad and goes over and, takes care of him, pulling out some of the work that he's doing away from his hands to like bring him to bed. And the way the animators perform this moment really brought me to tears of what I remember of my father working that hard in the shop. And yeah, so those are what I'm remembering now. But thanks for asking for that, Callan. I appreciate that.
Would you also talk about why you chose the casting that you did for Ember and for Wade?
Oh, of course. There were two pockets that I was looking for, two buckets, I'm sorry. There was obviously performance of where we needed the character to go, and then the elemental part of them. And for Ember, I was looking for someone that had a tremendous fierceness, but then also a tenderness to their performance. And I saw this film called The Half of It, written directed by Alice Wu, that starred Leah Lewis. And she showed this sort of temper in there, and she showed this sort of strength in her defending of herself and her defending of this current identity that she has in the film that really moved me. And then this tenderness to her own father in that film that really brought me to Ember as well. But I also saw clips of her online where she's singing, and she has a really smoky voice, and that smoky voice was the elemental part of it that I really thought could help the character come alive. And she did it a tremendous job. It's watching her work, she winds herself up in this way before every line that brings her right there. And I've never seen anything more raw before. And I'm so thankful for her performance. And then with Wade, It was a very similar sort of a pattern trying to fill those two buckets. I had seen this film called Uncorked, where he, Mamadou Ache, plays sort of this, it works in a wine shop selling wine, and his dream is to be a sommelier. And as he's running the shop, he had this wonderful way of flirting where he sort of improv this sort of really endearing, what was his line? It was just like, oh yeah, I'd love to get your number, but you know, I know everybody's Googling. And he did this little song that was so appealing, and it had a coolness and sort of this, you know, go with the flow attitude that really brought this style of Wade in alive. But then there was this show called Oh Jerome No that he's in, where he was able to cry in this full spectrum, in a funny way, in a sincere way. And but he did, it all was just so, you know, fluid, the way that he was doing it, that won me over, of knowing that our character Wade would be so emotional throughout the film that, you know, it was very difficult to find something with someone, a performer with that kind of spectrum. And he definitely brought it. And working with him was, you know, one of the highlights of the film. He was just so open and vulnerable and game for everything that we were trying.
I know in the past you've done some voice acting for Pixar. Do you have a character in this movie?
I don't have a character in this movie. It's been just the job has been so much of building this one. You know, what's so interesting was that as I was making this film, I was playing a character for Lightyear. And so I felt like I was performance fix in that film during the same time as making this one.
And are there any Easter eggs we should be looking for? I know you always have them in your movies.
Yeah, there's classic ones there, you know, where the Pizza Planet truck is. What we did to that Pizza Planet truck is really fun. And then that's somewhere in the movie. You know, there is, you know, the Luxo Ball is a classic. Our a character from the upcoming movie, Elio, is also in there. And, you know, he or she has been in a couple of the, you know, trailers and ads, and so it's out there. You know, there's some one of my mentors who also passed away during the movie is also in this thing. Ralph Eggleston, who has just been a major force at Pixar, who I love, and so there's all sorts of there's some characters from older movies in there too. There's Doug is in there somewhere. So if you can find Doug the dog from Up is in the film as an elemental character. And they're little surprises, hopefully, for everyone.
And when I saw the screening, it looks like Carl's First Date, which also features Doug, is going to play before the film. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm so proud that it's in front of it. Only because my short also that I had done, Partly Cloudy, was in front of Up. And so there's something full circle going on with this that... you know, and it came out tremendous. I was so emotional over it. I can't wait for people to see it.
Would you like to give a shout out to your team?
Yes. Thank you, Carolyn. The production was long and it was very difficult. And there's so much, this film is so much about diversity and bringing that together that, you know, we had these sort of, I don't know what you would call them. I guess it was part of the research where we asked, you know, so much of the crew personal questions and gathering personal stories of their experiences with their parents or them as parents and some of the crew that had first and second generation stories as well. And we tried to bring so much of all of that into the film. And I'm so grateful for not only the amazing technical work they had done, but also for all the personal vulnerable pieces of themselves that they put into the film. And so I'm forever grateful. Thank you, Pixar. Thank you, Pixar crew, for all that you gave for. Thank you.
Well, Elemental opens on June 16th. And Peter, it has been so great to talk to you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom? Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.